Hello, and welcome to another episode of Blue Marble Podcast. I'm your host, Rev Charbert. Thanks for tuning in. Here we share motivation and education about how to put your green faith into action for the planet and for each other. This time, I'm joined by Reverend Andrew Bear, who is my spouse and also a minister with the Circle Sanctuary. We are both healthcare chaplains and eco ministers. And so, I thought it would be a bit of a change of pace this time to just step back from the world of activism per se, to appreciate our deeper connection to the reality of things by experiencing nature belonging. So often, as activists, advocates, people of faith and conscience, we can feel overwhelmed from cognitive fatigue. That's a thing, cognitive fatigue, from climate grief, from despair for the world, from existential dread, from vicarious trauma. Any of that sound familiar? Well, it's everywhere, to be fair. And our body, mind, and spirits are not meant to be able to absorb it all alone, especially when there's so much happening beyond what we may actually be able to affect. So today, we're just going to be talking about befriending nature in seeking balance, a sense of belonging, acceptance, and equanimity. We all need that. And there's no better physician, counselor, or teacher, I think, than nature herself. So, Andrew, thank you so much for sharing this conversation with me today. And before we get into it, I just want to ask, what do you want people listening to this podcast to know about you?
Well, thank you, Charlotte. My love of nature goes back to when I was a boy. I grew up in the Chicago area, and there was two early formative experiences. One was in the backyard. There was a beautiful maple tree, and I used to climb the tree and sit in the branches and I used to spend a lot of time up in that tree, and I felt at peace with the tree, and I felt at home with that tree. And that tree became a good friend of mine. Also, my father instilled a love of nature and used to take us to lakes, go to the forest preserves in the Chicago area. He also gave me a deck of cards from the Audubon Society that had photographs of birds and then descriptions of the birds on the back of the cards. And I used to just look at all those cards and read the descriptions, and it helped me to start paying attention to birds back then when I was young. When I was in high school, I started studying photography and took photography class throughout high school, and I became interested in nature photography. And then my undergraduate is in environmental studies, and I wanted to devote myself to care and protection of the earth. And obviously my career took a different path, but I've always had a hand in doing what I can to protect nature. That's taking the form of wildlife rehab, helping to heal and care for injured and orphaned wildlife. It's taken the form of becoming an organizer and activist around various climate initiatives, against the Keystone Pipeline, and trying to pressure those who are investing in fossil fuels to divest. And I'm also involved with our local Monterey Bay chapter of the Climate Reality Project, doing some outreach to different like-minded organizations and trying to build synergy among them, and organizing public forums and doing public speaking. So one of the main threads that runs throughout my life is love and care and protection of this precious planet and all of its life.
Thank you. You know, I knew that about you when I met you.
No surprises there, huh?
You know, for our listening audience, I had a private moment when I was watching Andrew in a private moment where he didn't know I was watching him. And I just remember going, okay, that's the one, because there was just a sense of complete kinship. Like, here's someone who I really get where he's coming from, and I know he's going to get where I'm coming from deep down. And it's this connection, this love of nature. And I, like you, Andrew, I'm a lifelong lover of nature. When I was a little child, I was an ocean girl, and I used to go out all the time to the tidal pools and play. I would just sing to the sea urchins, and I would dance with the little stingrays that would come up to the shore. And you know, I would go out and rummage around in the flotsam with my grandmother, and we'd make little sculptures and stuff out of whatever the ocean brought us. And I just loved it. I loved the palm trees and the banyan trees. I grew up in Hawaii there, I'm speaking of. But I mean, I used to go out, and like you with the tree, I had several trees that were friends of mine. I'd go out and I'd hang out with them. I'd go sit in the trees. I'd make up songs. I'd sing songs. And my home life wasn't always comfortable. It wasn't always comfortable to be in the house. So I would feel comfortable going out and just being in the park. Remember when kids could do that? You didn't have to worry about kids just going off and doing that. You know, going inner tubing in the stream and running around with the ducks and, you know, tunneling along the rocks and everything. And that was where home was. And I felt this profound sense of kinship with all living beings, flora, fauna, with the very essence of life itself, with the planet itself. It was homing. And I thought it was the craziest thing when people talked about how scary the wilds are, because for me, you know, human drama in the home place and in society was a lot scarier than what I encountered in the wild. So I'm someone who's tried to love the wild and protect the wild and advocate for the wild and act for the wild all my life, and I still do. So that's some of our backstory a little bit that we would want you all as listeners to know. And is there anything else, Andrew, in particular, especially as you've matured and become more of an activist, that you would want to share about your connection with nature?
Yes, and my what's really matured in my life is moving from a sense of, it started with a fondness for nature, like aesthetic beauty, liking to be in nature, to connecting with nature. And then the connection with nature deepened to what feels like a very intimate relationship with nature, where, I feel that this particular tree and these particular animals and this land and this ecosystem, that there's a relationship between myself on a very deep level. It's maybe it could use the word of a soul level, but just a very deep connection. That's more than connection. It's a sense of community, of family, and that we belong together and that we are in relationship together.
I really love that. And what strikes me about that is that so many indigenous peoples who are people of place have that sense of belonging to place and relationship with place deeply woven into the DNA of their culture. And I did not have that. I was an itinerating child, moving every few years, you know, always plopping down in some new community. And didn't have a sense of place like that, but I knew how quickly to build relationship with certain aspects of any natural place I was in, whether it was a shoreline or a skyline or a tree line, certain animals, like you say. And I think that's what's matured about me as well. It's the same theme that it's about relationship. And the thing about relationship is that it's got to be mutual. So I'm not just going and recreating in nature. I'm not just going and connecting with nature. I'm not going and taking from nature, certainly. I'm going and listening deeply, paying attention to what nature is doing and communicating, waiting and welcoming feedback, because relationship is communication. There's a feedback loop. What is the feedback loop with an animal, with a tree, with an ecosystem that I can participate in that starts to give me a sense of mutuality, of that kind of relationship? That is very present in my life now, and that has been a maturing process. So yeah, I kind of share that with you. So along those lines, I'm wondering then, what might we say to a listening audience about how we can experience that deep sense of belonging with nature?
Yeah, well, for me, it's something that felt quite natural, but it's also, I think, a part of lots of traditions all over the world for people who are living in relationship with the land, in a relationship with nature is, I like the Quechua word Aini, which means sacred reciprocity. And like you mentioned, Charlotte, it's not just recreating in nature, it's a giving and receiving. And we receive so much from nature. And sometimes I think, what would my life be like if I gave to nature as much as I take? And to try to live in respectful balance. If I was in relationship with another human, if it was one-sided where I'm just taking, 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 that relationship wouldn't be a real healthy one. And so I kind of apply that same principle to relationship with place, with land, with the planet. And I make it's become a habit of mine to make offerings wherever I am in nature. It might be offering substances like tobacco, cornmeal. It might be a particular beverage. It's also about visiting a particular place. If I'm trying to cultivate a relationship with a particular place, it's not just going once and then coming back a couple months later. It's like trying to go regularly and really get to know that particular place, and to get to know that place, what it's like during the day, what it's like in the morning, what it's like at dusk, what's it like in the middle of night under the stars, what's it like in the different seasons, spring, summer, winter, and fall. I also, I think we can make offerings with our actions, not just offering substances. We can offer water to plants that look thirsty. We can plant in our, if we have land or a yard, we can tear up that grass and plant, what are the indigenous plants that would normally grow in this area if humans weren't manicuring and landscaping everything? And I see that as helping the land express itself naturally by planting indigenous and endemic species in our yards. I think we can make offerings through healing, like that my work, and a lot of people are involved in wildlife rehab, wildlife rescue. If there's animals in trouble or orphaned or sick, It's bringing them to a place of safety, helping them to heal, and hopefully releasing them back to the wild. And there's one more thing I want to say, and that's really expressing my love and talking to nature. I talk to everything. I talk to the trees, I talk to the clouds, I talk to the sun and moon, I talk to individual plants, and I speak words of love, letting the love in my heart come through my words. And I pray for a particular place. And, as an example, there was an open space near where we lived in San Jose, California. I would enter a forested area that was mostly oak and California bay laurel. Before I would enter, I would touch the leaf of the first tree that I'd come to, and I'd hold the leaf, and I would announce and introduce myself, let the land and all of the living beings there know why I'm here, what my intentions are, and I'd let the land know that I'm coming with respect and with love in my heart. And then I'd pray for the land, and then wait to feel as if I'm invited to enter before entering. And all of these things that I've shared help me feel like I'm establishing a mutual relationship of respect that comes from my heart.
Well, that continues the theme of relationship that I is so relatable for me, because as I think, I've been deepening my sense of belonging with nature over time. I might interact a little differently. And folks, he really does talk to nature. He really does do all those things he said. I can vouch for that. But I don't necessarily externalize it in the way of like giving a tobacco offering or an essence offering, but everywhere I go in nature, the offering I'm thinking of is I try to close my eyes and imagine what it's like for the ecosystem around me viewing me, putting me in perspective of like the owl that might be in the tree looking down at me, or the mouse that might be looking up at me, or the sea lion that's poking its head up from the beach looking at me, because I mean, we're a noisy, busy species. So I try to quiet and slow way the hell down and just imagine, what it's like for other living entities, beings in this place to be regarding me. So and I'll ask, I'll say, how can I be worthy of your attention? How may I be welcoming to you? How might my presence be welcoming to you? That's kind of like the nature of the prayer I have. And so that makes me very careful about the way I'm walking, speaking, being. I'm trying not to be that loud American tourist in the middle of trying not to have everything be a damn photo op. I mean, it's just like those things just drive me nuts. It's like I'm trying to be very aware of how I am perhaps fitting in to this whole scene here. And the other part that helps with that is actually doing some homework to try to get to know the plant and animal species who live there, and maybe a little bit about the geological history of the place. Because I know that when I know, like places I go where I've worked on rehabilitating baby seals, or I've helped to save sea otters, or I've released, rescued sea lions, or I've worked on owls or deer or the possum people who are just amazing. Or squirrels. I've come to love them. I've had a relationship with those babies, those parents, those foxes, those bobcats, whatever. And I imagine them being in their dens, in their home, because I've done my homework. I know where they live. I've interacted with them in a healing way, in a beneficial way. And So when I'm then out in the wild space, it's like I can really picture. I get more skilled at seeing them. And I want them to be glad that I'm there. It's like the beautiful line in Isaac Dennison's Out of Africa at the end when she says, "Will they remember me? Is there a color on the sunset for me? Will the migrating birds sing my song? Will I be remembered?" She was a part of that ecosystem. And belonging to me, and then I'll wrap this up, belonging to me is about how we are regarded and how we fit in to all of the relationships that care about us and know us as much as we care about them and know them. And it's so, I can't even express how that makes me feel. It like opens my heart, and it's so tender, and it's painful, and it's so amazing altogether. So, I mean, in your process of growing with your relationship with nature, Andrew, do you have particular experiences that have awakened you to a more deeply connected reality? Anything in particular that's happened?
Yeah, I think I would like to answer that in two different ways. And one was through wilderness experience, learning primitive skills. And when our son was young, I found an organization, and I can't recommend them more highly. It's Four Elements Earth Education. They're in the Sierra foothills of California, but they every summer they have programs for kids learning primitive skills in nature, and then family week-long experiences. And so this is going out and learning to make fire with just what you find in nature. And so you're starting to pay attention to things like what kind of wood is good to make a bow drill set, and where do you find this wood? If it's been raining out, how do you find wood that's dry enough? How do you create a tinder bundle that'll hold the charcoal? What if it's windy outside? What if it's raining outside? Where do you find food? How do you find water that's safe to drink? Or how do you purify water? How do you make a shelter so you don't die of hypothermia? And where are you going to find the debris? And it's surprising how much debris you have to put in a debris hut to keep yourself warm and dry. It's like 3 feet thick. So it takes quite a bit of work. And when it's hot, when it's in the hundreds, in the middle of summer, where are the cool areas? When it's cold outside, where are the warm areas? If it's raining, where are the dry areas? So it's a very, it didn't strike me at the time at the beginning as necessarily like a spiritual type of experience, but it really informed my nature spirituality in some surprising ways. Just the physical work. It's hard work doing all those practicing all those skills. It takes a lot of practice, and you can't do it if you don't know the ecosystem, if you don't know the trees, the plants, and all the living things, if you don't know the patterns of nature in that area. So it really instilled a sense of really learning place and connection through a very physical experience. It's not always comfortable at the time. It can be a real hard work, and as you're learning skills, it can be a little frustrating because it takes a lot of practice. But that has just been a doorway that's just opened up so many important experiences that I wouldn't otherwise have had. And one of the teachers used to talk about being the difference between a tourist in nature versus being a native. And he used the example of like going to the moon, and you need this special suit, and you need oxygen, or even scuba diving, you need wetsuit, you need oxygen tanks and all this gear, and you know how to use it. You're going into an alien environment where humans don't normally live and don't necessarily belong. People go into the forest like that. They've got all of this gear and backpacks and stuff. And if you can just walk into a forest with just a knife, and that you're using for a variety of skills, if you can do that and live, then you're a native. Otherwise, you're a tourist. And so it's kind of another way to describe that would be going from a sense of, it's deepening your sense of belonging, deepening your sense of connection.
I've got this image of all the gear, all the
I know.
merch, which in itself almost is what we're relating to more than actually the wild around us. I do want to mention for a minute the program you mentioned, the four elements. I did a podcast last year about the most effective youth programs in teaching about environmental justice in action, and that was one of them that's been highly recommended. Yeah, it was great.
Great. Yeah, Rick Barry and the other leaders that are involved do a great job. And
So there was another one. Was there more? That was like a physical experience. Was there something
yeah,
else?
so that was the physical. Interesting is at that on the four elements at the family camp out in the wilderness. There was a Haudenosaunee man who would help lead us in, the Thanksgiving prayer, the Thanksgiving address, and starting, with the earth and working your way up through nature, giving thanks to everything. And he also led us in song and dance. And we were just dancing and drumming and having a great time under the stars. And there was a woman there that was taking photographs, and every photograph she had, it looked like it was a blizzard. And if you zoomed in, there was no campfire nearby. There was no, sparks from a fire. There was just all these, I mean, it was like almost like a, there's so many orbs. And we're just marveling at that. And everyone, the consensus was is these were nature spirits who were gathering around to enjoy what we were doing. And the insight I got from that experience was so often, those who really care about nature think about the damage that humans are doing to nature, and they'll say things like the earth would be better off without us. But my real sense in that experience and reflecting on it is, when humans are living in proper relationship with nature, being caretakers and living with respect and living in close contact with nature, and then having some whoopee and dancing and singing and drumming, I think the land likes that, and the nature spirits seem to really like that and enjoy that, and that
Dogs
was a
like it
good
when we
thing.
sing. I mean, there are a lot of virtuous, beautiful things humans can do. Just wish we did them all the time. Yeah.
And then, I would say synchronicities. This the other thing I wanted to mention were the synchronicities that happen when I feel like I'm in the flow of place. And just a few quick examples of what's awakened me to deeper levels of connection. And one just happened a couple, it was about last week sometime. Here in California, we've been having a lot of rain, and I always talk to the rain clouds, and I make offerings to the rain clouds. And after a storm had passed, I was just looking up at the night sky, and the clouds weren't directly overhead, but I was just making my offerings and talking to the rain and thanking the clouds and the rain and the cloud people. And as soon as I finished my prayer, I was still looking up, and all of a sudden rain came down on my face and rained for like maybe 2 or 3 seconds. And I looked up at the sky and there was no clouds there. So I was in thanking the rain and then feeling the rain on my face without any clouds overhead. That seemed to me like nature talking back to me, saying thank you. And the other experience that comes to mind was spending a long time at the ocean, a couple hours one evening, and making offerings again and talking to the ocean and really trying to attune to the energy of the ocean through dusk. And then it was night and the stars were out, and I was walking back to my car, and I just had the feeling like I didn't say goodbye. So I turned around and talked to the ocean and thanked the ocean. And I told the ocean I love her and blew a kiss to the ocean. And as soon as I did that kiss, a shooting star flew overhead and like over out under the ocean. And just the timing of that, I felt like nature heard that and
Was responding.
responding in that way. So sometimes, if especially if we pay attention, we'll experience that. We can talk to nature and send our love to nature and pray with nature, and nature talks back.
Well, sensing that feedback loop, was there more? Was there another one? No? Then I'll noodle on with something that's it's not similar to those wonderful kinds of particular connections you've had, but well, I think one thing that I noticed is people would always talk about go contemplate nature. Go do a sit spot, go walk in nature, go talk. And I thought, what the hell does that mean, contemplate nature? I mean, I just go out in it, look around, what, because people contemplate nature in all kinds of ways. And these days, usually with a mobile device in their hands. But it's like, what really made a difference for me was I did a year of study with a group out of Britain called Trust Technique. And they were really focusing on mindfulness practice with animals who've been traumatized as part of the rescue process. Here we get into some therapy. And they pointed out that, again, we are a species that can present to the rest of the animal kingdom around us, to other non-human animals. We present as having very fast, busy minds, rather aggressive minds comparatively. And having energy that is incredibly cluttered, and we're very focused on a lot of activity with our own gadgets and things. And so the level of connection that other non-human animals is able to feel with us, they pointed out, often is one where they're intimidated by us because they don't want to be hurt or dominated. And that just made me feel so very sad when I realized it's probably true in a lot of our interactions. It's the how the others regard us as animals is that we're going to try to dominate them, control them, and often hurt them. We also, as you pointed out, Andrew, when we're our best selves, can rescue, save, heal, establish, honor, love, and I wish their whole point was to move to a place where we can do that. And one of the deeper connections they recommended was by learning how to still our own minds, being in proximity to another animal, because I see me as part of nature. I'm not apart from it. I am an integral part of it. I'm a human animal, So sit in the presence or near a non-human animal or a tree or some other living being entity and learn how to do mindfulness practice, learn how to transmit peace, but so importantly, learn how to still my mind enough. And this is the thing that blew me away because this was a paradigm shift for me. When they said, you still your mind enough that they can actually fathom your inner self. Because the emotional intelligence, the kinesthetic intelligence, the naturalistic and intrapersonal intelligence of other species is so much greater than what we tend to exercise. They're operating on those levels of intelligence, and our rational, busy brain noise doesn't allow them to get through to us or us to fathom them very well. And we're constantly assessing their value based on how intelligent they are, based on our rational, logical brain, that one kind of intelligence. And we've done that to indigenous peoples, we've done that to animals, usually as justification for some reason to exploit them or dominate them or colonize them, right? And so it doesn't have a good outcome for them. But if you calm your own mind, the whole trust te technique was saying if you do that and you can be literally calm and still and peaceful in yourself, tapping into those deeper kinds of intelligence in your own being, and you're actively just transmitting that toward another, they will pick up on it. And then the level of feedback, of communication feedback, is already happening at these deeper levels. So I've taken those principles from that therapeutic program for rescue animals, and I've been applying it generally to human and non-human beings. And I find that every time I do that, all of a sudden my consciousness opens up so much more to that other. And I'm hoping and trusting that they are picking up on me. They certainly like being around me a lot more. That's clear. So that has been a mind blow and a real shift for me. Yeah.
And reminding me of another thing that we've experimented with in the wilderness, the four elements, earth, education, and other like-minded groups, is they'll often challenge the kids to touch a deer. And you have to do it with a witness. Someone has to vouch for you. But, that's kind of the value of a sit spot, is you're sitting still in a place, and it's also something that if you do regularly throughout the year, you get to know a particular place in a deeper way. But if you're wanting to t touch a deer, you have to make yourself so still that, first of all, the birds in the area aren't alarming to let other wildlife know that there's a predator here. So you have to, kind of calm your mind to the point where you're not making ripples throughout nature. You also have to study the deer's behavior and look for deer trails and looking at the landscape. And if you look at a landscape, you can tell where are the paths that deer normally will walk. And if you look for a place where, if you follow the deer path, it's like there might be some shrubs or something where it's like, if I sat there and stilled myself, and then you just wait, you have to know what time of day do the deer come by. So it involves a lot of nature observation. And, there are people in these programs that are able to do this, and you have to situate yourself along the deer trail, still your mind, and be very patient and very still. And often the deer will come right through there, and you just kind of reach out your hand and touch them as they go by. And so things like that are possible if you know a place, know animal behavior, and you're able to still your mind, and so you're not creating a disturbance to the landscape. It's pretty cool.
It is cool, and it's kind of been that experience that has made me become such a powerful advocate and activist. Because, as a wise person said to me once, when you fall in love with someone, you're going to want to protect that one. And when I fall in love with a species, or I fall in love with a place, or I fall in love with an ecosystem, I want to protect them. Nobody, I don't need an argument about it. It's a given. I'm going to protect them. They're kin. They're kin now. And I don't want to see harm come to them. I want to see them be able to thrive. And I want to know how to do no, you know, as in healthcare ethics, I want non-maleficence, and I want beneficence for them, and I want justice for them when they're being invaded or damaged or in harm's way. They are not perpetrating that on others. And I want that injustice to stop because I want to protect them. And it's not, here's the thing though, that's different. I've come to understand when I apply my nature spirituality, what I've been learning from the relationship is that it's not up to me to protect them. It's up to me to go be in relationship, listen deeply, understand deeply with humility, and take cues from nature about what nature is asking for, what the wild is needing, and never assume, be an ally, and that's a real difference for me now that frankly helps me when I feel overwhelmed as an activist or an advocate, as I realize, wait a minute, this is, and that brings out my codependence, this it's Al-Anon help. It's like, it's not up to me to rescue. It's up to me to be in relationship with and listen deep, because nature's going to do. Nature's going to do. Nature's going to do. But it's up to me to understand how I can participate in what nature needs to do. Yeah, so yeah.
Yeah, and I think similarly, you know what? We have a lot in common. There's the saying, we protect what we love. And you're right. I would say nature doesn't. Sometimes I look at it as Nietzsche, instead of framing it as I'm going to save nature or save the species, is I'm going to stop people who are doing violence to
That's right.
nature from
Yeah.
doing violence. It's like I'm going to trying to get in the way of those who don't seem to be in proper re relationship with nature and are doing real damage and trying to
Yeah.
stop them.
Well,
And
because that really is the perpetrator. So naming the perpetrator and stopping the abuser. I'm going to stop abusers. I'm going to stop abusers from hurting those I love. It's kind of
yeah.
that simple,
And wildlife rehab was took things deeper for me because, and I was also, as and you also participate in wildlife search and rescue. It's like when we find injured wildlife that that have been injured by being hit by a car or being stuck in a fence or
Poisoned, trapped,
poisoned,
whatever.
they're still defending themselves. And when we approach to rescue them, they think this is the end, and they're gonna defend themselves against me with every ounce of energy they've got. And but when I do, successfully rescue whether it's
Owlet.
a cormorant or a bobcat or a skunk, then holding it in my arms, putting it in a getting it to the wildlife center, where I'm volunteering, so I'm able to check up on this individual and a lot of other individuals, and then we've both been involved in releases. So it's once they're rehabbed and strong and ready to be released to the wild, it's going to those places and releasing them. And if it's, like for s some animals, it's like it, like doves, or it might. Or possums, it might not be safe to release them back to where they were, but
Yeah.
we've released Yes, squirrels and doves in our backyard.
Because it was the same as us
And then they
around.
hang out there, and then they
Oh,
hang
they
out
like
there for
it.
a while. And then, what changes over time with doing wildlife rehab is when I see a squirrel, when I see a dove, when I see an owl, when I see a crow or a raven, when I, it's just like, I wonder if, are you the person that I rescued, or are you the offspring of a
Oh,
person I
yeah.
rescue, or do you know the person I rescued? And all of a sudden, it's like you start, I started seeing
Yes.
animals as not, hey, there's a raccoon, but there's an individual.
There's Bob.
There's
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because you name them. I mean, that was a practice in
absolutely.
at the wildlife centers. You name everybody. Everyone's got a name.
Well,
They're per, you know, and we're not personifying nature. We're identifying with
actually, I don't think
individuals.
we weren't supposed to. We they had numbers because they didn't want us
Well,
to
I
name
named him.
them
Okay, I did
individually,
it. That's
yeah.
Bob.
But over time, when you're the go to a lake and there's geese there, it's like I've rescued so many geese that have been trapped in like fishing line wrapped around their legs to where it caused, dug into their legs and got infected, and I had to catch them, which is certainly not easy to catch a wild goose.
Yeah,
But
you're the goose
catch them
man.
in, but when I'm there and there's, it's like when I see wild animals out in nature, it's just like I have a sense of I might know you, or you might be the offspring or a relative of someone I rescued. And suddenly it becomes very like there's a personal relationship there with the living beings that we share our area with. And that's really changed things and made me want to protect wildlife even more, because now it's personal. These are my friends.
And that is part of the therapeutic value, because belonging is all about relationship. And I'm gonna pivot to that a little bit, because I will say personally that one of the best things I want to stay in touch with always while I'm doing real human intent sort of advocacy issues that are all about human behavior and trying to stop abusers from abusing, basically stopping perpetrators. That's what advocacy is all about. That's what activism is about, trying to put up those protection walls and stop, bind, do all that stuff. Is on the other side of that, I want to stay in touch with the joy of healing, the joy of restoring, the joy of seeing that through. I mean, it's one of the reasons you and I have been rescuing dogs forever, and we specialize audience in like the severely traumatized dogs. Is it there's not much better feeling than seeing a non-human species who's been abused by humans come to have a trusting relationship with us, and beyond that, really regard us and love us, and you see them thrive, and it just makes your soul sing, and you're like, I did something for someone. You feel it come home to roost, That is therapeutic. And for me, that's a balm to the soul when so often in the sphere of human activity, I don't have influence over every world leader or every business leader who's causing harm, but I can do this for these beings. I can be a friend. I can be a kind, good friend. That's therapeutic to my soul as well. So I always want to stay in touch with that work. Yeah. How about you, Andrew? You're muted. How about you? So, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of books that have been written about the therapeutic benefits of nature connection and, Last Child in the Woods. There's seems to be a growing popularity in forest bathing and just the healing energy of, soaking up the chemistry of nature that can be beneficial.
Yeah, and I'm a palliative care chaplain, and I visit people in their home environment usually, and many of them are living with just, I'm not gonna lie, god-awful life-changing illnesses. they're not anywhere near hospice eligibility, and they've got years of trying to figure out how to manage this thing, and they are fighting. You talk about the animal you're rescuing fighting against the trap. Yeah, well, talk about ALS, talk about late stage Parkinson's, right? They're fighting to find quality of life. And there are a lot of folks who feel deeply isolated and they've lost a sense of connection. They've lost a sense of belonging. And everything about daily living has become about the medical plan and the caregiving plan. And it's amazing to work. I find a lot of my clients are budding eco-spirituality people because for many of them, their formative religions are not working for them in these particular situations. But when they start to connect or reclaim a connection with the trees outside the window who are looking in at him, who've known them, and they start talking about how they've taken bird seed out on their back balcony to the nests, and they see the same mama jays come down every year and bring their fledglings, and they see the same squirrels come and visit. And I said, so they know you and they trust you. They bring their babies to you. You mean so much to them. And it's like you see scales fall off their eyes while they realize, oh my gosh, I'm loved. I belong. I have a place here. And in fact, they need me. They value a relationship, right? So there's the belonging factor. And all of a sudden, people will cry and they'll tell me again, I totally lost touch with the fact I'm part of this ecosystem. I'm the mother of the mountain or whatever it is. I'm the keeper of this part of the seashore. And when they reconnect with that and they start to realize the relationships within that, it's very, very therapeutic. You can see that like changing their whole quality of existence.
And I'm fortunate, and I would say the patients in the hospital that I work at are fortunate. In Monterey, the hospital is surrounded by forest, and
It's so beautiful.
it's like every room in the hospital has a beautiful view, and that's certainly not always the case. And often, like you've had to work creatively to how to, especially if nature is something really important to someone, how do we bring that into the hospital? Because unfortunately, nursing homes and hospitals are not
They're sterile.
places that are conducive to nature connection. And so I remember when I was a hospice chaplain and visiting somebody in a nursing home who just loved bird watching, and I went out and bought a bird feeder and I put it outside her window and started, feeding it, and with permission from the nursing home administration. And when the bird started finding it, suddenly it was full of birds coming, and she got to
Beautiful.
sit there and watch the birds. Another person was telling me how much it was raining out, and she wanted to be out in the rain to just touch the raindrops. And she was talking about how the trees, the blossom flowers on the trees this time of year, she really loves. And so I went out and I just, it was raining pretty hard, so I put a cup of water out in the rain and just let it fill up a couple inches and snipped off some, some short pieces of branches with blossoms on it from the tree. And I brought that into her room. So she was able to, touch the water that just fell from the sky from rain, and got to enjoy the beauty of the blossoms on the trees outside. And so, in a therapeutic environment, there's we often have to be
Environment.
creative,
Yeah,
but
the
there's this.
environment. Well, and I had a client who had really advanced MS and was restricted to a wheelchair and was in pain all the time. And yet, and here I'm thinking too, she loves the ocean and can't get down to the ocean, obviously can't navigate that big wheelchair down there to put her feet in the surf anymore, anything like that. She loves sea turtles, really loves sea turtles. And so I said, well, let's just bring you sea turtles. So we had to use technology, but this is using technology in a way to help her connect. with big screens, like at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, or maybe the Boston Aquarium if you've been there, or so, where she's seeing sea turtles just go across. And then she started telling me she was starting to have dreams about sea turtles, and after some spiritual direction that I did with her, come to understand she was connecting with her ancestral spirit, her grandmother, whose image, whose totem was a sea turtle. And so she's feeling now all of a sudden connected not only to sea turtles she's known and swum with, but her grandmother who's passed, who's now swimming with the sea turtles, who's bringing her love and reassurance. Boy, talk about building a foundation of belonging. This is belonging. This is all the key connections you are in relationship with that hold you and you hold them, and it's all precious. You know, that's different than just connection. It's deep belonging. I'm aware of time, so I want to ask, Andrew, you know, what practices might you recommend to activists to help sustain us as we are facing many, many challenging times on this planet? Are there some practices you think are especially therapeutically good?
Well, forest bathing, just walking in the forest is really rejuvenating. Other practices that don't take any time at all, because you can do it anywhere, is, and this also kind of gets back to the theme of Aini or sacred reciprocity, is just becoming aware that the oxygen that we're breathing is coming from the plant world, whether it's the trees, the herbs, the grasses and the prairie, or a significant percentage of the oxygen is created by plants in the ocean, by sea plants and phytoplankton. But we're in relationship with plants, and so we can just be conscious of that and call to mind the trees and plants in our environment. And with every inhale, we're receiving from the plants, and every exhale, we're exhaling our CO2. And the CO2 is what the plants use for their respiration also. So it's like it's both, to me, a spiritual practice of feeling in sacred reciprocity and giving and receiving with the plant world. It's also physics. It's literally what's happening is we are every breath, our lives are intertwined with the plant world. That's one example. Another one is from Thich Nhat Hanh, who's he died about 2 years ago. Was a Vietnamese Buddhist teacher, but the directions he would give for walking meditation is to walk mindfully, one breath with each step. You might sync your steps with the out breath and the in breath, but every time you're placing your foot on the ground, you can send your love into the earth. And you can combine those as you're walking outside, walking slowly and mindfully. Every breath in, we're receiving from the plants. Every breath out, we're giving to the plants. And every step, we're kind of imprinting our love into the earth. And those are all things that I really can help establish a connection. And if possible, I recommend doing that barefoot. And
Well, those are
the other thing is, if you have more time, a sit spot is a great practice. Just finding a place that you'll visit regularly and just go sit there and just observe and
You
still
can
your
do it on a
mind.
balcony. You can do it on a balcony. If you live in an urban environment, it doesn't have to be like going out to the desert or on a retreat to the ocean or woods or plains, right? You can do it anywhere.
And then I just, I guess I'd like to plug a book that's has a lot of really helpful things in it. It's called What the Robin Knows by John Young.
Oh, yes.
And this is a whole book on bird language. And this is something that I could have talked about earlier in talking about what's really instilled to me a deeper sense of belonging. It's more of a sense of awareness. And that is, when humans enter a forest or a place of nature, the whole forest is aware of our presence because we tend to have busy minds and we tend to be noisy. And if you're trying to, for example, catch glimpses of the wild animals that live there, you have to really quiet down and you have to learn bird language. Well, you don't have to, but it really helps to know bird language. And you can do this sit spot or walking in the forest. And, if you know the various species of birds, they all have an alarm call that alerts the others to, predator coming. And when humans enter a forest or a wild landscape, the birds will alarm. And the birds that are deeper into the forest or deeper in the landscape will hear that bird alarm and then they'll alarm. And so it's like this concentric ring, like dropping a pebble into still water. There's like rings that go out of birds mostly warning all the other animals in the forest and other birds that someone's coming, and everyone will go still and hide, except the alarming ones. If you, and so you can, if you're sitting in a forest or sitting in a landscape, if you learn to, you let the forest go to its baseline, because when you first enter, you're disrupting the energy. Sit, be still, be quiet. At some point, sometimes it's 15 minutes or so, sometimes 20 minutes, the landscape will return to its baseline. And then, if you can learn, if you walk with this slowly and gently with a still mind, you can practice this. Try walking on a trail without triggering the alarm. And if you're able to do that, you are like in the flow of the landscape. And this is something that takes some effort and practice. It's not as easy as just breathing with plants and walking gently, placing your love and prayers into the earth.
So it's
But
advanced practice because it takes practice.
yeah, it's, I don't know if it's advanced, but it's it takes time to develop, but it's really enriching, and I can't recommend it high enough.
Well, I like that because in that beautiful Pulitzer Prize novel, winning novel, The Overstory, there's a I just it just is emblazoned on my brain. There's a moment in the prologue chapter where a woman's leaning up against a tree, and I think it's a Sequoia sempervirens is looking down at her and watching her busy brain going. And at one point, the tree says, "If your mind could be a slightly greener thing, the wonders I could show you." And just the idea that nature's a lot slower, which is not equivalent to unproductive. It's very productive. Nature, and here's the thing that's therapeutic. So often when we feel overwhelmed, it's like we're our adrenals are exhausted. We're just depleted. We're depleted. Our energy is exhausted. Nature doesn't tend to exhaust the wild, and wild things don't tend to exhaust their energy in the same way. They know, I think, quite expertly how to conserve their energy, because if they need a big burst of something in response to a threat, they're going to have that eustress to help them. And then you'll see them really on the move or put up, firewalls or whatever they need to do. And when they're not, they have no problem being in repose and sort of returning to a place of listening, observing, regarding, noticing. And one of the most startling things I've ever experienced is when I was quiet enough on a path in the woods and turned around and saw, probably about 20 feet away from me, a mountain lion just regarding me. Hadn't gotten the impression that she had decided I was prey or not, or what to do with me, but she was, I realized she'd been there and she was regarding me. And when I looked at her, she didn't look away. And we really regarded each other, and there was no wasted energy at all. I just went on my way. I backed up. She didn't move. I was like, wow. Andrew, you're going to say something? You had your finger like you were going to say something?
Yes,
Yes.
my finger. What you're sharing just reminded me of something that it seems like it's common sense, but it was a clear insight that I had, maybe 15 years ago. And it's seeing that, humans, like all animals, we have sense organs, sense perceptions. We have touch, seeing, hearing,
Tasting,
smelling,
feeling.
tasting, feeling. And our bodies evolved in relationship with a natural landscape.
That's true, right? Yeah.
So it's like, to me, it's like nature completes the circuit. It's like I'm an open circuit. I've got these sense perceptions that are always scanning and sensing. And when I'm connected with nature, it's like completing the circuit. And then something's flowing. And
I'm even going to challenge you there. Not when you're connecting with nature, when you're reclaiming your place in nature, is how I'm going to say that, right? Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good I agree with
Yeah.
you on that. And
Yeah.
sometimes it's just looking at the patterns of water. I'll sit by a river and I'll just look at the ripples go by and the way they're distorting the reflection of the tree and the sky and the sun above and the different sparkles that are catching the tips of the currents. Looks like all these sparkles playing on the surface of the river. And there's something just about that experience of looking at the shifting patterns of nature that's just completely like vivifies my senses that are now open and flowing. And it's just a really incredible experience that when I became even more conscious about that. There's something important there, and we evolved to be connected with meaning, like our senses are interacting with nature as our bodies have evolved to do. Our bodies are not evolved to be connecting with screens and
AI
electronics and concrete and all the human stuff. So when we live in cities, it's so easy to get
In the
sick
urban jungle,
and
it is.
disconnected. And
Yeah, well that's I think that thank you for that, because this is going to be my parting practice, that and it's a principle. It's a principle put into practice, and it's built off of what you said. For me, quite honestly, one of the hardest things about being an advocate and an activist for justice of any kind, for the earth, for climate justice, social justice, it's all intersectional, is that ultimately I'm working in the human sphere trying to stop human perpetrators and human abusers from hurting those I love. That is hard duty, having to do that. So it's emotionally grueling. And the ways that I have to do that so often involve absorbing enormous amounts of information, doing my homework, interacting with people on devices. Right now, people are probably listening to us on a device, so I'm not trashing that. You know what I mean? But it's like you have to spend a lot of time. And now that we're in this crazy digital age with the advent of AI, our brains are just being bombarded with information right and left and right and left and right and left. So one of the most therapeutic practices that being in the wild offers me is it reminds me that I'm a biological. I might be enhanced because I have two knee replacements and they're titanium, but I mean, I'm a biological and I'm comfortable. I had a vision of that, of my son going off on a spaceship to Mars, leaving our planet behind and saying, "Come on, mom, come with me. This is your last chance." And he's looking down at me, and I'm holding our two dogs. I don't know. I have two dogs at that moment next to me. I'm holding them. I'm looking up at him and going, "No, son, that's okay. You go. I'm an earthling. I'm a biological. I'm good here." And that, when I awoke, realized that's my grounding. And so I need to go get away from social media, the information, digital age, and all that stuff, and go just be a biological in the wild. And that's the one principle, is the foundational principle of any kind of healing art at all, is the art of active presence, where being with another and they have your undivided attention. Nothing else, not a screen, not waiting for the phone, not something in the background, not a laptop, not a show. They have your undivided attention and they are in repose, just giving you attention and being open to the natural feedback loop that's happening. When I go do that in the wild, I come away restored every time, and everything always regains perspective. And so that is what I would encourage any of my colleagues to do, is please go be a biological in the wild somewhere and give the wild place, the wild beings you're with, the wild spirits you're with, your undivided attention. Turn the damn devices off and go do that, and do it at any kind of regular frequency. It's going to help you heal. It's going to help you be better and sustain you. I believe that. Okay,
And
Andrew, you got the last word.
if you are going to do some technology, do like Blue Marble Podcast or
Yeah.
something that'll
Or just take a few pictures of where you just were, but don't spend the whole time on selfies. Andrew, you got the last word, and then I'm going to have to sing us out here. So, what's any last thing you'd want to say to folks?
Well, I feel complete with what I've shared. The foundation of my relationship with nature and my sense of belonging is coming from my heart, and it's coming from a place of love. That's all. It's pretty simple.
Well, I hope for those of you listening, if you've stayed with us through the whole podcast as we've been talking, I hope we've been able, in just among the three of us, the two of us talking and the one of you hearing, that to create sort of a little bit of a sanctuary, just a little bit of a haven away from the craziness, and focus a little bit on what is sustaining and life affirming. And that concludes this episode of Blue Marble Podcast. Thank you so much, Andrew Bear, for being here with me this time. Thank you to our audience for tuning in. Folks, if you value what you've learned here today, please share this information with others. You can find recordings of these programs available for listening and download by going to the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. That's circlesanctuary.org. Just look under the Our Work tab. You will find all Blue Marble podcasts under Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, with links to current and past podcasts. There are lots of them. Check out the Circle Green link as well for more resources. Until next time, this is Char Bear signing off. Thank you for all the good you do. Stay true and blue. And hey, hope to see you in the green space.